So we are holding on Lamed Gimel Amud Bey's fourth line on wide lines. To recap, we had a few different opinions in the Mishnah, and we had a Braisa also, which we're going to see how the Braisa, how exactly the opinions in the Braisa dovetail with the Mishnah. We had in the Mishnah Rabbi Yehuda saying that if you need to let blood for a Bechor, then it doesn't matter even if without that treatment the Bechor is going to die. Don't do anything because you might make a mum. We have the Chachamim saying, go ahead and do the Hakazah, do the bloodletting, as long as you do it in a way that doesn't make a mum. If by accident you made a mum, then you can't shecht it on the basis of that mum. And Rav Shimon says it's okay, you can do the Hakazah even if you're going to end up making a mum in it. Because Dov Hashanim has gotten. So one opinion says don't do it. The other one says do it only in a place where it won't make a mum. And if you do, you can't shecht it based on that. You have to wait till it develops some other mum. And Rav Shimon has said that you can, that Rav Shimon said it doesn't matter because Dov Hashanim has gotten. In the Braisa we had actually four opinions, and we'll see later whether the Braisa is basically saying, is talking about the same case as the Mishnah or a different case. We said in the Braisa you have Reb Meir saying that you can only do the bloodletting where it's not going to make a mum, basically like the Chachamim of our Mishnah. The Chachamim say it doesn't matter, even if you make it in a place where it's going to make a mum, you just can't shecht it on that, so that's a variation of the Chachamim in our Mishnah. Reb Shimon saying you can even shecht based on that mum, and Reb Yehuda says, as he does in the Mishnah, that no, even if the animal is going to die, you can't do anything. So then we started trying to relate that to, we have
this is the variation between Mishnah and Braisa.
It's just, you have two, it's just the first two opinions, right? So then we mentioned that you have a Mishnah in Trumas where you have a Machloikas. If you have a barrel of Truma that's Suffolk Tommy, what do you do with it? And you have three opinions over there. Rabbi Eliezer is saying that you still have to guard it as if it was real, as if it was regular Truma. Rabbi Yeshua is saying just the opposite. You can leave it out in the open, let it be in a situation where it's going to become Badai Tomei, so at least you can do something with it. And Rabbi Gamliel says leave well enough alone. So we wanted to say that Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Chia had taught their respective children that you have the same machloikas as you have in Truma. So over there you have over here. Rabbi Meir over here who says that you could do the bloodletting in a place where it's not going to make a mum. He would hold like Rabbi Eliezer, that you have to try as much as possible not to make the barrel tummy, and therefore over here you have to try as much as possible not to make a mum in it. So you can only do it in a place where it's not going to make a mum. The Rabbanan of Abraisa, who said that you could even make it in a place where there's going to be a mum, would hold like Rabbi Yeshua, who says over there that you're able to put the barrel in a place where it'll become tummy. And Rabbi Yehuda says do nothing would be like Rabbi Gamliel, who also said do nothing.
He's a mum.
Well, yeah. Okay. The question is, in the case of the Truma, actually, Rabbi Eliezer is kind of the more machmir one because he's saying even if it was out in an open place, you have to put it away in a guarded place, in a closed area. Whereas Rabbi Gamliel is saying just leave well enough alone. If it happens to be outside in the yard, you can leave it. But over here in our Mishnah, yeah, obviously Rabbi Yehuda is the one who's being machmir. So the question is, the Gemara says mimah. Who says that equation is correct? That in fact we can relate the opinions of the Tanoim over here to the opinions of the Tanoim over there. Dilma ad pan like Ka'amar Rav Meir Hos. So maybe Rav Meir only says over there that there, actually meaning over here, really Hosha it should be, in our case of the Bechor, you know why Rav Meir says that you have to be careful only to do the bloodletting where it's not going to make a mum, because it would be a dying. Because after all, you're doing something with your own hands. You're going to make a mum in it or not, as the case may be. Aval hocha, awesome really, but over there in the case of Truma, de Groma, where after all, Rabbi Yeshua is not saying go and make it Tomei as in touch a sheret state or something. All he's saying is you can leave it out in an area where it's more likely to become Tomei. So therefore, maybe over there it's only a groma. Maybe it's Rabbi Yeshua spiritually. Maybe the mayor would agree with Rabbi Yeshua that over there you're able to leave it out, you're able to take it out and put it out in the open where it's more likely to become tame, because you're still not actually being the tame at the adayim, as opposed to over here, you would be bloodletting from a place that's going to make a mum. And similarly, the ad kan like Amar Rabbi Eliezer, conversely, Rabbi Eliezer is machmir over there and says you have to still guard the barrel. Ella, you know why Rabbi Eliezer might hold that way? Shema Yovei Eliyahu v'Tarena. Because after all, but it's only a suffix Torah. Eliyahu HaNavi might come and declare that it's Tomei, or that it's Tahor. Or, okay, I mean, you know, obviously when the Gemara says Shema Yahweh Eliyahu, we mean, in other words, there's a possibility that it can be found to be Tahor. We might find out that whatever suffix it was that put us in this situation in the first place, we might find out afterwards what actually happened. And therefore, that's still Tahor. So therefore, he says you have to guard it like real Shema. Aval hafa, but over here, in the case of the animal, dishovik le mayis, the fact is, if you leave the animal and you don't do anything with it, it's going to die. Maybe it should have bonus fiddle, then maybe he would hold. Rabbi Eliezer, therefore, doesn't necessarily have to hold, like Rabbi Meir, that you're only allowed to do hakaza in a place where it's not going to make a mum. Maybe he would hold like Rabbanan. If you leave it alone, it's going to die. In other words, not because you don't feed it. Not that. Because it's got high blood pressure. It's going to die from that. It's going to die from that condition if you don't do the bloodletting. So maybe, therefore, in the case of the truma, it's right now it's suffix truma, but not necessarily is that going to develop that never again are you going to be able to eat it. You might afterwards find out that it's actually mutter, as opposed to over here, if you don't do something to the animal, if you don't let blood, it's going to die. Maybe it could have bonon svidale. Maybe he would hold like the rabbanon over here, that you could even do the bloodletting in a place where we're in a place where it's going to make a mum. If that's what you need, if that's what veterinary medicine tells you you have to do, then you go ahead and do it. And yet another possibility. Now, we also said we tried to equate the Rabbanon over here with Rabbi Yeshua over there, but not necessarily. Maybe the Rabbanon only say over here that you can do the bloodletting wherever it's medically necessary. The Shavakwe Mayas, again, because if you leave it alone, it's going to die, and therefore necessarily it's going to become ulcer to eat, and therefore you might as well, therefore you got to do something. Abel Hossam, again, you might argue that the Rabbanon over here might hold the Machlokas over there, again, Shema Yahweh Eliyahu Vitarena, that maybe Eliyahu will come and say that it is Tahor after all. Therefore, maybe the Rabbanon over here would hold like Rabbi Eliezer over there, that you have to guard the barrel. So therefore, could Rabbi Eliezer speak about who? Maybe they would hold like Rabbi Eliezer. But Ad kan like Omer of Yehuda Hoffa. Furthermore, we could say that maybe Rabbi Yehuda would say over here, it's very machner to cover the Adayim, again, because you're actually making a mum, the Adayim, and therefore he's not going to allow you to do it. He's definitely not going to allow you in a place where it's going to make a mum, and he's not even going to allow it, as we learned yesterday, in a place where it's not going to end, where it may not make a mum, because Adam Bahul Amalonim, when the person is in a hurry and is in a panic, he may accidentally do it in a place that'll make a mum. And fine, it's a double shayna miskaven, but if you hold the holes all over shaft, that double shayna miskaven is also. So over here, he has reason to be machmer, because he's actually doing the adayim, aval hocha, but when it comes to the barrel of truma, the gromma, where again, nobody is saying actually make it tome, all Rabbi Yeshua is saying is take it out into the open where it's more likely to become tome, it's only indirectly causing it to become tome, maybe it's Rabbi Yeshua's spirit, like maybe Rabbi Yehuda would agree with Rabbi Yeshua.
He would not authorize Rabbi Yeshua directly to make it come in.
No, we're talking about Rabbi Yehuda over here. Rabbi Yehuda over here won't allow you to do anything to the animal, but over there, maybe he'll allow you to do like Rabbi Yeshua and put it out in the open, because you're not making it tummy be a dime. What? Yeah.
You won't even know.
No, you have a better chance of finding. You have a better chance that a dead sheriff, let's say, is going to come and then touch it and then die over there, and you'll see.
Right, you have a good chance
of some kind of tumor happening to it. Right. Yeah. And you have more. Yeah, there's more likely to be tumor outdoors than there is in the house. Yeah. Okay. I mean, the truth is, if you leave it open, it's going to eventually become ulcer because a snake may have drunk from it, as we say, all over the place in the shop. So maybe we mean that you leave it open only a little bit. Maybe we mean that we're talking about, for example, it was in Ramak Shlosha Prakim the other day, had these dinim. It mentions, for example, that wine, the first couple of days when it's starting to ferment, there's no problem of gillery because it's bubbling, and therefore snakes are afraid to drink from it. So maybe we're talking about that. Maybe when Rabbi Yeshua says that you should uncover it, that's what he means. Whatever. Okay. Anyway. So not necessarily would Rabbi Yehuda, who's machmer over here, be so machmer over there like Rabbi Gamliel that you have to leave it alone. Maybe he would agree with Rabbi Yeshua that you could actually take it outside or uncover it or whatever. And Shitim Kubretis adds another one, because we have a lot of possibilities over here. Maybe Rabbi Yeshua is only allowing it over there because it's drama ba'alma, but over here it's via dayim, so not necessarily would Rabbi Yeshua, not necessarily Rabbi Yeshua's lenient opinion over there agree with the Rabbanon over here. Okay. So Abel Hassam did drama, but over there it's only drama to Rabbi Yeshua. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda would agree with Rabbi Yeshua. Ba'ab Khan like to Amr Ram Gamliel Hossam, and yet another possibility, Ram Gamliel, who's Machmir over there and says you have to leave it where it is. He might say, you leave it where it is. Again, the Shema Yavei Eliyahu Vitarena. Again, because he says it's not necessarily Tomei. Maybe it's Tomei, maybe not. Don't put it in a situation where it's more likely to become Tomei. Abel Hacha, but over here, Shavikle Mayis. Here, if you leave it exactly where it is, it's going to end up dying. Kirabanan, clearly. Maybe Rav Gamliel over there would hold like the Rabbanan over here. So all told, the whole equation falls apart. Each of the three opinions over here could hold like various opinions over there.
So therefore,
in other words, there's no necessary relation between the machloikas over here and the machloikas over there. Right.
We have to analyze the opinion of all the
because we went through. We could have said that maybe some part of the equation still holds, but no, now we said there's really no part of it that holds at all. But and not only that, not only we can say that logically we can assume we don't necessarily have to assume that Rav Meir over here would agree with Rav Eliezer over there and that Rabbanan here with Rav Yeshua over there, etc. Not only that, but also the reason for the machlokas in the two cases is based on different considerations entirely. Nothing to do with whether you're doing the adayim versus grama or whether the animal is going to die without the treatment or not, etc. Rather, what it really is in the case of the Bechur, the various opinions are arguing on a drosha from a pasuk. V'hacha b'kreitzvidi, and when it comes to the barrel of truma, also they're arguing based on drashas from a pasuk. So in that case, neither one has directly to do with the other, because in each case you have different psukim and different ways of darshaning them, and therefore, so the two machlokas have nothing to do with one another.
What do you mean we have different? Yeah, of course.
Well, no, in other words, the point is that we have, that we have one pasuk over here that refers to making a baal mum to making a baal mum in something that already has a mum over here, and in effect, the bechor already has a mum here in the sense that without this, it's going to die. So we're going to see that there's machlokas, whether there's an iser in making a mum in something that already has a mum. So that's one consideration, nothing to do with truma, because by truma it's a whole different consideration. By truma it's a different consideration, how we darshan a pasuk over there, that you have to guard truma. Does it apply only to truma tahara, or does it apply to truma tzloya? So they're both psukim, but they're completely different. We're using the psukim, and we're analyzing the psukim in completely different ways. No, we didn't know that to begin with. We thought that it's the same kind of machlokes. That's why we're saying that not. And now we're going to point out that that's now we're going to say they're not arguing based on svara as we thought, they're arguing based on drashas from psukim. Namely, the amr of chiva abba amr of yeshim. Hakol modim. Now we have a number of cases where the Torah says not to do something, and if a person ends up doing it, it may or may not be something. So sometimes you already did something, but what if you do another action along the same lines again? What if you do the same thing? What if you do a different action that accomplishes the same thing again? So it's already been accomplished. Is there an iser and is there malchus in it? So number one, hakol mordim b'chametz acha machametz shulchayim. Number one, where here we have the machlokas about a bechor, where again the bechor in effect is a balmum because it's going to die if it's not treated. And yet, we have different opinions over here whether you can make a baal mum, whether you can make a mum in it. That everybody would agree that when it comes to a mincha, the machametz acha machametz, where we know the Torah tells us that a mincha cannot be allowed to become chametz, as we learned in Menachos, with the exception, of course, of the shtei alechem and then the lachme chametz of Torah, whatever. But basically, all menachos have to be kept as masa, as non-chametz. There's an iser min haTorah to make them chametz, because the pasuk says lo takrivu chametz and lo say also chametz. So even the part that the kohenim are eating cannot be allowed to become chametz. So the machametz acham machametz. Suppose that one person made the mincha chametz, and then another person again comes and makes the chametz. The same mincha. Shu chayev. The second one would be chayev. Now what do we mean machametz acham machametz? Obviously, right. There's no chiddush in that, though. So Rashi explains over here, we don't necessarily mean that we're talking about, let's say, the first person put a lump of sourdough in it, and then the second one does the same thing. Because once it's chametz, it's already chametz. Right. The second one adding the sourdough is not really adding it. And there are achronim who learn that maybe he'd be chayiv in that case also. But in any case, Rashi learns what we mean is, let's say, for example, one person kneaded the dough when it was chametz, and the next one put it in the oven, both of them are going to be chayiv. even though it's already chametz after the first one did what he did. It's not like the second one is making it any more chametz, but he's doing a different action. Mechametz means he's doing, mechametz meaning they're doing something with a chametz dough. He's doing one of the actions with a dough that is chametz, which is awesome. So therefore, so he's chayav dechid like to offer chametz because the pasuk says it should not be baked as chametz, and Rashi explains the details. No, but the point is that you put it in the... Yeah, I think somebody's trying to get in over there. There's no actual difference. Obviously, you put them in the oven the same way. But the point is, the pasuk does say, loy se offer chametz, that you're not allowed to bake it as chametz. I say it's fine. Leave it a draw. Sorry about that. The pasuk tells us lo se ofer chametz, and Rashi explains the rest of the details, which we learned in Menachos. You have two pesukim, lo se ofer chametz, and you have lo se ofer chametz. And from that we learn that this is an example of Javah Shoyi B'chlal V'yotim and Akhlal L'lamid, that it teaches us about the whole Chlal. So just like Afiyah, baking is one of the Afsiyahs, it's one of the actions that can be done with a mitzvah. And we're saying the Torah specifically singles out that you're not allowed to bake it as chametz, that you're not allowed to bake a chametz mitzvah. So therefore, we learn from that every other individual action would be the same thing. So one person needs it, and the other person shapes it, and one in Vayikra, and one in Tzad. One pasuk is loisei osa chametz, and the other one is loisei osa chametz. So therefore, we learn from that that every action with a chametz mincha is a separate chiyuv and a separate isur malchus. So everybody would agree to that. Also, the misaris acha misaris, another example, the Torah tells us in last week's parashah's Emor, over outzachem loisasu, that you're not allowed, the Pesach mentions over there several different kinds of ways in which the genitals of an animal or a person can be damaged, or moch, v'chosus, v'nosus, v'chorus, and if suppose that one person does one of them, and then another person goes and does another one of them, so misaris acha misaris, also shulchayev. Also, everybody would agree that the second person, and obviously the first person, is chayev. And we know that because the pasuk mentions four different things. Umo'uch, if the testicles are squashed, the chosos, or they're chopped up, the nosuk, or they're pulled out, the chorus, but they're still in the scrotum, the chorus, or they're completely cut off. So the point is, imal kodes chayev al noisik like olshikin. Now, if a person is chayev for cutting them off. Even when they're still in, he's chayv malchus. So if he's chayv even for koris, and we know because the pasuk says of arzacham leitasu, al noisik leitolshikin. How much more so if he's noisik, he pulls them off and throws them away where they're completely gone, as opposed to in koris, at least they stay. Yeah. Over arzacham leitasu, it applies to any animal that could conceivably be in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, also human beings. Yeah. So if it says that a person is chayav for korus, for cutting them off, even though they're still in the scrotum, why does it have to also mention that he's chayav for noisik, where he's pulling them out and, as Rashi explains, throwing them away, taking them completely out of the... No, but that's the point. Korus implies... So, okay, Rashi learns that korus means he cuts off the testicles from their cords, but they're still there in the scrotum, as opposed to noisik, Rashi learns would mean that he rips them out and throws them out, so then they're not even there inside the animal anymore. Rabbi Nagershim explains a little bit differently, that korus would be he cuts off the scrotum and leaves the testicles, and noisik would be that he pulls off the testicles. Either way, once you say that koris is chayev, noisik, which is even more than that, to say it's even more sterilizing the animal, how much more so? Therefore, ela lahavi noisik after koris shul chayev. The point is, the Torah is telling us, suppose one person did koris, where the animal has already been sterilized, and now another person does noisik, he's still chayev malchus for it. Even though the animal has already been sterilized, it's incapable of fathering children anymore. Nevertheless, still doing a second thing of it, it's still awesome. Yeah, that's what we're saying. That's what we're saying, exactly. So in those two cases, everybody would agree. Loy nechlechu ele b'mato mum b'bal mum. Machloikas would be, if you have an animal that's already a bal mum, for example, this b'chur that has high blood pressure and it's going to die from it, and now you're going to make another mum in it. So the question is, can you do that? Rav Meir says, look, the pasuk says there should not be any mum in it, which we darshan, the word yia just means there should not be any mum, but that's not a lav, that's a statement of fact, that there can't be a mum in kodshim. But since the pasuk is phrasing it as an issur, don't do it, so therefore we understand the word yia as if it said yahaya. Kol mum lo yahaya boy, do not cause there to be any mum in it. So therefore he says, and it says kol mum, it could have just said mum lo yibay. Instead it says kol mum. So we learn even if it already has a mum, you're not allowed to make another mum. Rabbanan Savri, whereas the Rabbanan hold, no, but you have a different posse. Look at the whole, not a different posse, look at the whole posse. Tumim Yiyah L'Ratzon. The posse says that an animal for a korban has to be tumim in order that it should be accepted as a korban. And then it says kol mum lo yibay, implying, when do we say kol mum lo yibay? Which fine, we agree that means you're not allowed to make a mum in it. We hold that only applies when the animal is a tumim at the point you're making the mum. That would be, then you'd be over on the Easter. So therefore, that's the argument then between Reb Meir and the Chachamim over here, where Reb Meir is saying you can only do it in a place that's not going to make a mum. In other words, even though this Bechor already has the mum of having high blood pressure and it's going to die from it, nevertheless, you can't make another mum in it because kol mum lo yahayavoy. And the Rabbanan say, no, that would only apply if it was a tumim. Now that it's already a Baal Mum, then you're allowed to make another mum in it.
So basically, it's saying two psukim contradictions.
Not really contradict. Well, that's what we have to figure. We have to figure out what each one is going to do.
One second.
That's what we have to figure out. What each one is going to do with the other one's puzzle. So that's the question. But a mayor high tumim yilaratzen my avidlay. So what is a mayor doing with the words tumim yilaratzen, which seem to limit the kol mum lo yibay only if the animal is a tumim? Okay. Listen. The mayor is looking at the words kol mum lo yibay. The Chachamim are saying, yes, but you have to look at the three words before, tumim yilaratzen. So the question is, why isn't the mayor looking at those three psukim? The answer is, mivoy lo demo'uti bal mum me'ikra. The answer is, yeah, but the mayor would say that is only telling us that the din of that you're not allowed to make a mum doesn't apply to an animal that had a bal, that had a mum to begin with. Meaning, in other words, before you even mocked the shit, it already had a mum. So then, Rav Meir would say, then the pasuk is saying, because at the time you were makdish it, it was no longer tumim. Therefore, there's no issur in making a mum. But if you were makdish it and later on it developed a mum, or in this case we're talking about a bechor, which is kodesh as soon as it's born, and later on it develops a mum, then Rav Meir says you're still also to make another mum in it. Therefore, in the case of our bechor over here, you can't do the bloodletting in a place where it's going to make a mum.
Like so, if there was no mum, you're not allowed to.
So if there was no mum, then you're not allowed to. And if there was no mum when you were makdish it, and later on it developed a mum, Rav Meir would say you're still not allowed to. Only if it had a mum before you were makdish it, then you would be allowed to. So what do you mean? Baal mum me'ikrib shita. Obviously, if it had a mum when you were makdish it to begin with, of course you can make another mum in it. Dikla ba'almo, it's no different than if you were makdish a tree. It has no kedushas aguf. All it has ever is kedushas damim. Of course you can make a mum in it. What's the problem?
The Gemara
is asking on Rav Meir. Ella, no. So we have to say what Rav Meir would say. We learn from Tumim Yilaratzen, L'ma'uti Ksulei Amakdashen La'acha Pidyonon. Fine, the word Tumim Yilaratzen comes to exclude the case where the animal is Ksulei Amakdashen. Fine, it didn't have a mum when you were Makdash it. Later on, it developed a mum, so you redeemed it from Hekdash. Then, the question is, can you make a mum in it or not? So the Pasuk is telling you by the word Tumim Yilaratzen that yes, you can. But as long as it still belongs to Hekdesh, or in this case, the Bechor, in effect, always belongs to Hekdesh because there's no being paid it, then in that case, you can't make another mum in it. Now, why do you
call it Tumim then?
It's not. Tumim Yilaratzen means when you're not allowed to make a mum in it, when it was Tumim, when you were Makdash it, and at that point it was Laratzen, and later on it developed a mum, but you haven't yet been paid it, then it still has that degree of Kedusha that you can't that you can't make another mum. There we focus on Kol Mum Layib. Once you buy it back from Hekdesh, then you need the word Tumim Yilaratzen to tell us that then this din Kol Mum Layib doesn't apply to it. Now, why do we need a process for that? Because your mayor would say you would have thought otherwise. Look, we know that Sora and Akdoshin still have a certain residual Kedusha. You're not allowed to shear them. You're not allowed to work with them. You would think the mumin nami ritsu. So you would think maybe it's also to make a mumin them also. Kamash malon. That is what the word Tomi Miyalarasa come to teach us according to the mayor.
After you were poed to them,
when they developed a mum, and then you were poed to them, then even though it's true they have kedusha as far as dizav avoda, but they don't have kedusha as far as a mum, and you're allowed to make another mum. But other than that, when they still have before they're poed to them, or in the case of a bechor, which you're never poed to them, then not. That's what he says. That's what we focus on kol mum leyiva.
Okay. That's what he said. Shita.
Well, no. So shita was we said if it had a mum before you were makdash it, then there's no kedusha in it, right? Here we're talking about, no, it didn't have a mum before you were makdash it. You were makdash it, then it developed a mum. Rav Meir is saying, kol mum lo yibay teaches that you still can't make another mum in it. If after you buy it back from Hekdesh, then you're allowed to make another mum in it. Then we say, tomim yilaratzen, tomim lo yibay. Okay. Zerabonanah. Okay, so that explains your mayor. That's what the mayor would do with the Chachamim's words, with the Chachamim's words, Tomim Yilavot. So they don't contradict, right? So what do the Rabbanon do with the words Kol Mum Lo Yibay? If they're focusing on Tamim Yilaratan, how do they understand? How do they understand when it says Kol Mum Lo Yibay? Obviously, we're saying you can't make a mum in it when it's Tam. But where are they getting so? And we're saying they're saying you're allowed to make a mum in it once it has a mum already. So what are they doing with kol mum lo yiboy? Where kol mum, as your mayor says, seems to imply even if it already has a mum, you're not allowed to. And even if it already has a mum, you're not allowed to do another one. The answer is legroma udasi. They use the word kol in a different sense. Not that it means if it already has a mum, you're not allowed to make another one, but rather you're not allowed to do anything that's going to cause that it will have a mum. Namely, the Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, mum lo yiboy. No. Before it, no, if it has one already, they hold you allowed to make another one. But when it's a tam, the Chachamim are saying, when it's a tam, you're not allowed to make a mum. But not only you're not allowed to make a mum directly, you're not even allowed to cause that a mum should happen. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, when it says mum lo yiboy, the pasuk says there should not be any mum in it, implying that you shouldn't even do it indirectly. Oh no, from that, ein li ela shelo yitim b'mum, the words mum lo yiboy would just mean you can't directly make a mum in it. You can't directly take out a knife and slash it, for example.
Mum lo yiboy is direct.
Minayin, because Yahaya, we said don't bring about a moment.
Right.
Minayin, how do we know that you're not allowed to indirectly also? Shaloyavi dvelo botik. For example, a person is not allowed to take a juicy fig or a piece of dough, the anichena ala oizen, and put it on the ear of the animal with the intent today shayovi telaviyechlena, with the intent that then a dog will come and want to eat
that's grama.
And that's what we're saying. That you're not allowed to do that either, but that a dog will then eat it and create a mum in the animal because it'll bite off its ear. Tamadlama kol mum, meaning echad mum, but echad kol mum. So it applies whether you're making the mum directly or whether you're making the mum indirectly.
How do you call it directly?
Directly would be, for example, that you take. No, not gani. Directly would be you take out a knife. Yeah, but you're dying. You take out a knife or a needle or what have you, and you actually cut off. Yeah, you actually cut off.
In this opinion, chachamim is the yadayim and grama.
And grama, exactly. Okay, so that's the reason why Rav Meir and the Chachamim are arguing. Nothing to do really with the svara of Yadayim versus Groma, and is it going to die, isn't going to die, based on how we understand the Pesukim. Is the Pesuk telling us that you're not allowed to make a mum in an animal of Kodshim that already has a mum, or are they telling us, or is the Pesuk telling us that you are allowed to? So that's the Machlokas. Nothing to do, therefore, with the matter of Truma. By the way, an interesting side point over here, we're going to talk about in the beginning of the next parak, when we start talking about the list of mumim, it mentions over there mumim of the ear, where you have a notch in the ear or something. The Alter Rebbe, at the very end of Seder Mechiras Behema HaMvakeres, after this, so the Alter Rebbe deals with Seder Mechiras Chomet, how to do it in a way that's valid off Yalacha. Then he says, Me'inyan Le'inyan, let's talk about Seder Mechiras Behema HaMvakeres, because you have a similar concept where you have to sell something to a goy in a way that's binding off Yalacha so you don't have the issue of Bechur. And then at the very end of it, he puts in one paragraph, he says, by the way, while we're talking about Bechur, we have to mention over here, people have this notion that you can be matir a bechur based on a notch or a nick in the ear or something, and the Alter Rebbe says it's not so. And he says that the Alter Rebbe sources include the Taz and then the Truma Sadeshin and whatever, that basically the entire outer portion of the ear, pretty much everything that's outside the skull, the Alter Rebbe says, even if all of that is removed, it's still not a mum. A mum would only be if something affects the portion of the ear that's inside the portion of the ear of the animal that's inside the skull. Okay, that's all that ever has. He has his sources. He has the Taz, he has the Truma Sadeshin, et cetera. One of the counter arguments to that is based on our Gemara over here. If you put dough or whatever on the ear of the animal and a dog bites it off, actually it's not going to bite off the part that's inside the skull. It's going to bite out some part of the outer ear. And then we're still saying that would be considered
okay.
So what does the Alter Rebbe do with that? So the Tanakh said, among others, I mean, there's many, many, many Achronim deal with what the Alter Rebbe says on this. And in fact, you have a couple of Achronim who, for that reason, argue against the Alter Rebbe and say we there's no reason to accept that Chumrah. However, for example, the Tanakh talks about it in one of his Truvas. He says, on the face of it, yeah, that is a strong argument. In practice, it's hard to be makel against the Alter Rebbe, especially there was an actual mitzvah, as mentioned in the footnotes to Shulchan Aruch over there. The Tzemach Tzedek mentions it briefly. The Alter Rebbe's brother, the Maharil, also mentioned it in a tshuva of his own on the subject that there was a story one time in Ladi during the years when Alter Rebbe was living over there, where he had a case of a bechur that somebody was matir on the basis of a nick in the ear, and when the Alter Rebbe found out about it, he said, no, it's also, and you have to bury it, as we learned before. No, not he changed his mind. No, he held that. So the Tzemach Tzedek said, even someone else was master in the Alter Rebbe, when he heard about it, said, no, it's also. Because as we say, he says that any part of the outer ear still is not considered a mum. So anyway, so the Tzemach Tzedek mentioned, he said, based on that, it's very hard to be makel against the Alter Rebbe when he actually did it that way in practice, or in just like a lock of it. So how it would be over here, so how he would address this? Okay, one answer is, I think some ascetic says briefly, okay, conceivably you could happen that the dog bites so much that it actually bites the part that reaches into the part of it. Yeah. Not like people. Yeah, indeed. Okay. Right. Okay. Anyway, so that's the machlokas about the bechor. Nothing to do with svaris. It has to do with how we understand the pasuk kol mum lo yiboy, whether it's telling us that you can make a mum in a bechor that already has a mum or not. And hocha b'kroy tzligi. Next, when it comes to the case of the barrel of truma, also it's a machlokas based on psukim. Namely, the amr of Yehuda amr Shmuel, v'chein amr of Shlokish, v'chein amr of Nachman amr Rav Bavur, very popular teaching. The pasuk says, "Va'ani hinei nasati l'cha es mishmeres trumoitai." The pasuk says, Hashem says to Aaron and to his descendants after him, "I am giving you the guarding of my trumois, trumois in the plural." So what do we learn from that plural? Rabbi Eliezer says, "B'shtei trumas hakasim medamer." Rabbi Eliezer says that the Torah is, that the pasuk is talking about Trumoisai. We're going to see in a second. Trumoisai is how it's pronounced. We're going to talk about that in a second. Rabbi Eliezer says, "B'shtei trumas hakasim medamer." Rabbi Eliezer therefore holds that it's talking about two different kinds of trumas. Achas truma tahora, v'achas truma tluya. One is where it's tahor and you can eat it. The other one where it's tluya, where it's in the suspended state, because you don't know whether it's tama or tahor. And still, v'amar achmana, ovid lashimur. Still, the pasuk is still applying the word mishmeres to it, implying that you have to guard it. So therefore, that's what brings Rabbi Eliezer to say, that therefore you have to bring it inside and cover it and do whatever you can, even if it's tluya, because he says that's what the second truma is talking about. Tosfos actually points out there are other Gemaras that mention that actually that the two Trumas we're talking about over here are one that's Tomei and one that's Tahor. We were saying the Tahor one you eat and the Tomei one you can have enough from, for example, burning it. So Tosfos says, okay, but you have the expression is Mishmeres Trumoisai, so therefore, in other words, you have that the Lacha Mishmeres Trumoisai, so therefore, in effect, Tosfos says you have that the two Trumoisai you have the word Lacha Mishmeres, and the word mishmeres trumoisai, and therefore you're able to douse in all of them. The tahor one you can eat, the tamei one you can burn or have other hanah from, and the tluya one, Rabbi Eliezer is saying, you still have to guard it just as if it was tahor. Rabbi Yeshua, what does he answer to that? He says, trumosi ksiv. Yeah, but the way it's written in the Torah, as you just said, it's without the vav, so therefore it can be read as if it said trumosi, my truma, in the singular, and therefore it's only talking about truma to men. We read it trumoisai, but that's the point. It's a machloik.
He doesn't understand that?
You have a machloik that's in many places in Shas, and we're going to have it over here also, called Yesh Eimu Mikra, Yesh Eimu Masoros. Come on, now that we've been learning together 6 years, we should be familiar with that. Rabbi Yeshua knows perfectly well the word is pronounced trumoisai, and if the Baal Koda reads it trumosi, we will correct him. However, Rabbi Yeshua holds that we go according to the way it's written in the Torah, which is called Yesh Eimu Masoros. And Rabbi Eliezer apparently holds that we go according to the Mikra, the way it's actually read.
Well, that's my question.
Okay, so the point
I
is.
I know there's two interpretations.
Okay, so good.
I want to know, how can someone say that if it's read Trumosai, its meaning is Trumasi?
We do that in a number of places in Shas. We have a lot of places. We have a half dozen or more places in Shas where we have this Machlokes, it's Yeshem Lemikra, Yeshem Lemasaras. Some of them, like we have over here, many of them are Negeya Lahalacha. Many of them are Negeya to practical Halacha. Why is it, last Sukkot, how many Lulavim did you take?
Did I take?
Yeah, how many Lulavim did you pick up and take every day of Sukkot? How many? Did you pick up one at a time, two, three?
Oh, one at a time.
Yeah, no, doesn't the puzzle say Kat Poist Marim? So why weren't you taking two? because we understand that as a potential cap pass, and with a number of other things.
Oh, you got it there.
Yeah. Cap place would be plural. Cap pass is singular.
That's what the Korean do.
Yeah, whatever.
But I thought cap place meant the leaves.
No, cap place means the branches, and cap place in plural would have to mean that you take two. But because it's written without the verb, we read it as if it's a cap pass, and therefore, we take only one. You have a name. There's a lot of examples.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not happening. Okay. But there's a lot of. I can't think of all the examples. But okay. We're gonna have another one in our Gemara over there. Yeah, something like we had at the beginning of Sanhedrin. We had a whole machlokes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fine.
I don't know.
Tell me which
story.
Is that the one? Fine. Let's look it up. Let's see if we can look that up. Okay. So, for example, you have one over there was one over there was about the question: how many dayonim do you need? On Beis Din? Do you need two? Do you need three? So you have Pasuk Yashion Alekim. Yashion is also written Chotzer, so it can be read Yashion, which would be Lashon Yachid. And I mentioned a number of examples over there. You're from Sanhedrin. Whatever. There are a number of places in Shas where you have this argument. Yashem Lemitzvah, Yashem Lemitzvah. We learned about it as far as how many the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin over there. We also learned about it in Zvachim, how many corners in the Mizbeach does the blood of a Chatas have to be sprinkled on for it to be a valid Chatas. You have many, many examples throughout Shas. Anyway, the point is that...
It's always between...
No, it's not always between. You have different tenors. But over here, we have it between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Eliezer is holding that you go according to the Mikra, and it's read Trum Moisai, therefore it's a plural. And Rabbi Yeshua is saying, focus on the way it's written in the Torah, Trum Mosi, and therefore you only have the one. The question then is, remember the Rabbi Eliezer Savar Yesh Eim L'Mikra? Are you telling me that Rabbi Eliezer holds Yesh Eim L'Mikra? That when you're darshaning a pasuk, you focus mainly on the Mikra, the way it's read? Or Rimini, I have a contradiction from a Gemara and Kedushin, where you have like this. We know the Torah tells us in Parashas Mishpatim that a father is able to sell his daughter below bas mitzvah age as an omer hivriya. We're completely destitute, and he sells her. The expectation is that it's supposed to be that the odin or that her master, her son, is going to be miyayed her, the money for the purchase is used as money for kedushin, and he marries her and she becomes a bas chorin, and then this way it makes for her a recovered dika marriage. But the question is, suppose the father sold her, suppose he sold her, and now there could be a few possibilities. One is that she finished off the whole 6 years, or Yovel came, or whatever, and now she's still underage, and conceivably she's still of age to be sold again. Can he do that? And another question would be, what if the Odin was miyayed her? What if the Odin did marry her, and then let's say he died or divorced her, and again she's still underage? Can the father resell her? So that's the machlokes. You have the pasuk says that the father is not allowed to bevigdoi ba. Now, what does bevigdoi ba mean? The simple meaning, and in context of the pasuk, it means because he betrayed her. But how do we actually dash in it? So, bevigdoi is this. Okay, that's what we're going to discuss. Whether it also has a meaning, the word bevigdoi can also have the meaning of garment. So wait, bevigdoi ba. So, kibin shapirish talisay alaha, we learn from the word b'zigdei ba, miloshen beged, that once the odin spread his cloak over her, which is an expression of marriage, like in Megillas Ruth, yeah, Ruth says to Boaz that night in the granary over there, she says, horachta knafecha ala masecha, you should spread your garment over me, your maidservant, when it was marriage. So the expression of spreading a garment over somebody over a woman is an expression of marrying her. So therefore, kivin shapiris talisela, it means that once the odin spread his cloak over her and married her, did yield with her, shuv einu rashoi lemoishu, then her father is not able to sell her again as an omer hivriya, even if she's underage. Divrei Rabbi Akiva, that's what Rabbi Akiva says. Because Rabbi Akiva is focusing on the mikra, the way the word is read, and the word bigdai means his garment. Rabbi Eliezer says, no, the word bezigdoi, we don't understand it as meaning an expression of clothing, rather understand it as an expression of betrayal. One, Meloshin bogad. So there, and we can do that because there's no yud over there. Again, there's no yud over there. You could read it as with the second bays having a comment under it, just like you have the word, for example, kashamoi, so you can have the bogdoi, and therefore it would mean kibin shabogadva, once the father betrayed her by selling her as an amahavriya, shuvein rashar the moker, then he's not able to sell her again, even if there was no yud. So therefore, we see that Rabbi Eliezer holds you don't go according to the Mikra. Otherwise, you would have to understand it as the Zigdoi, just like Rabbi Akiva does. He looks at the way it's written in the Torah. But it's written without a Yud after the second base. So therefore, we can also read it as the Vogdoi Ba, when he betrays her. Therefore, so that's Yesh Eim on the Torah. That's Rabbi Eliezer saying, you go according to the Masorah. You go according to the way it's written in the Torah. So how are we saying over here that he goes according to the Mikra? Rashi mentions over here that there's an older Girsa that was the other way around, that Rabbi Eliezer holds Yesh Eim L'Mikra and Rabbi Akiva holds Yesh Eim L'Masorah, but Rashi says that doesn't fit with our Gemara over here. On the other hand, Tosfos has a long explanation, and the Tosfos over here, Rimini, Tosfos has a long explanation justifying the original Girsa, because the word was read bevegdoi, then it would clearly mean in his beged. Then it would clearly mean that once the Odin spread his beged over her, then the father can't resell her, but not if there hadn't been yud. Because it doesn't do that, so fine. You have other psukim that use the word beged with a chirif, like it's to say over bigdai, but over here, since it could have been understood one way or the other, no, there's also a half a yud, but because over here it could have been understood meloshin begida, therefore the pasuk should have made it clearer by putting it with a seire or a segel. And the fact that it didn't allows Rabbi Akiva to say that it's Meloshin Beged.
Oh, but that, by context, you
know automatically it means Beged, right? Okay. Fine, the point is, again, going back to the Gemara over here, that Rabbi Eliezer over there clearly holds that Yesh Eim L'Masorah, because he's going according to the way the word is spelt in the Pasuk, not the way it's pronounced. So how are we saying over here that he's going according to Yesh Eim L'Mikra, according to the way it's pronounced, through Moisai? No. Rather, we have to say the machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua about the barrel of truma is based on the following principle. Rabbi Yeshua sabar haruuya lachoshmar. Rabbi Yeshua holds that the pasuk is telling you only fine. Both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua hold that it's only truma, that there's only one kind of truma implied in the pasuk. So therefore, Rabbi Yeshua holds, okay, well then it means only a kind of truma that's suitable for you, that you can actually eat. No, only if you can actually eat it. Shmur, only then do you have to guard it when it's tar. Exactly, the she'ener ro'uya lachah, where it's not roi for you, because over here it's not, because it's tolui, because you don't know if it's tar or not. Like shmur, you don't have to guard it. Rabbi Eliezer answers, it's not even a matter of two different kinds of truma. This truma tluya could actually be tar, could actually be roya, honami roya. It may very well be suitable. Shema yabe aliyo be tarana. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer will say that there's no reason to say that the pasuk is excluding it. So nothing to do with two kinds of truma versus one kind of truma.
So
Rabbi Eliezer says, they both agree that
one cannot be excluded.
Okay, both, no, of course not tahara. You can't actually drink it. But both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua hold the Torah is only telling you you have to guard truma that's roi, that's suitable to be eaten, that's suitable to be eaten. So Rabbi Yeshua says only if you know for a fact that it's roi. Once you have a suffix, then it's out of the picture. Rabbi Eliezer says even a suffix, you could after all find eventually that it's roi. So they're arguing what the definition of roi is. That's all. One is potentially and one is actually. Fine, you want to say it that way. Fine. Okay. Fine. Anyway, the bottom line is that therefore Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua over there by Truma and Rabbi Meir and the Chacham over here by the Bechor are not arguing on anything that we can equate one with the other, because in each case it's a separate limud and separate consideration. Well, not no conclusion. It means, in other words, there's no reason to think that the Machlokas over there has anything to do with the Machlokas over there. Okay. Fine. Now, we had different opinions so far. We had Rabbi Yehuda, we had the Chachamim, we had Rabbi Shimon, we had Rabbi Meir and the Braisa. Who is the halacha like? Amr Rabbi Yehuda, Amr Shmuel, halacha kid Rabbi Shimon. The halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. One second. Master for Reb Nachman Yitzchok. However, Reb Nachman Yitzchok asks on that, we have two different statements of Reb Shimon. Hey, Reb Shimon, which statement of Reb Shimon are you saying the halacha is what? Ilema Reb Shimon de Masnitin. Are you talking about Reb Shimon's statement in the Mishnah that he's saying that you can, Reb Shimon said that you can do the hakaza even though you're making a mum. He didn't say anything about shechting in an eating. He just said that you're able, it doesn't matter even if you end up making a mum because Dovah Shein Miskaven. So, yeah, but fine. But if you're saying that Shmuel is telling us the halacha is like Reb Shimon of the Mishnah, what's the chiddush in it? Ad hash to loyash me'in and Shmuel Dovah Shein Miskaven mutter. What, has Shmuel never told us before that the halacha is that Dovah Shein Miskaven is mutter? We know that Reb Chiya Bar Ashi says in the name of Rav, the halacha is like Reb Yehuda, that Dovah Shein Miskaven is Osir throughout Shach, in mostly in Shabbos, but it comes up here and there also. We had it a week and a half ago also in connection with the case over there where you're pulling out or cutting off hair from the neck of the bechor in order to be able to shecht it. Yeah. Rav says the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, that Dovah Shein Miskaven is Osir. Rav Chanin Bar Ashi Omer Shmuel halacha is Rav Shimon. Rav Chanin Bar Ashi says in the name of Shmuel, no, the halacha is like Rav Shimon. The halacha is like Shmuel in this regard. Usually in Dine Isser Vehefer, the halacha is usually like Rav, but here almost all the posts can pass like Rav Shimon. Dovah Shein Miskaven is Osir. And furthermore, Rav Chiya Bar Avin Masni B'Loi Gavi, Rav Chiya Bar Avin learned that this machlokes about who the halacha is like without even the intermediary people, not Rav Chiya Bar Ashi in the name of Rav and Rav Chanan Bar Ashi in the name of Shmuel, but without them, just Rav Amar Halacha to Rav Yehuda or Shmuel Amar Halacha to Rav Shimon. So we know already, Shmuel has already told us that Dovah Shein Miskaven is also, so he can't just be coming to tell us the halacha is like Rav Shimon of the Mishnah, because there's no chiddush in that. Elo Reb Shimon de Braisa. Obviously, therefore, if Shmuel is coming to tell us a chiddush, the halacha is like Reb Shimon, he must mean Reb Shimon's statement in the Braisa that even if you ended up making a mum in the course of doing the bloodletting, you're allowed to shecht it on the basis of that mum. And in fact, Reb Shisha Breder of Idi Masni Lo Behedya. In fact, Reb Shisha Breder of Idi learns explicitly that that's what Shmuel said. Not even that we have to deduce it, but that we can that Shmuel said so in so many words. Halacha to Reb Shimon de Braisa. The halacha is like Reb Shimon in the Braisa. But therefore, in other words, that you're able to shecht it even on that mum, because since you didn't intend to make a mum, it was Dovah Shein Miskaven. Therefore, we're not going to penalize him. Now, the next Mishnah is going to tell us that. It's not situation. He's not necessarily going to make a mum. So in the next Mishnah and the Gemara on it, we're going to be saying that we're going to be talking about if a person makes a mum in an animal deliberate in a bechor deliberately, that we don't allow him to shecht it on the basis of that. But here, where he wasn't doing it deliberately, he was doing it in order to heal the animal, then Reb Shimon would even allow you to do that. Now, with that said, though, Tosfos learns that actually it's not just that Reb Shimon in the Mishnah and in the Braisa is saying two different things. Tosfos learns that actually the Mishnah and the Braisa are actually talking about two different cases. One is where the animal is going to die without this treatment, and the other one is where it's not necessarily going to die without it. Tosfos learns that we're talking two different scenarios over here. So therefore, according to Tosfos, then it comes out that not when we say over here the halacha is like Reb Shimon of the Braisa, not necessarily would it be in all cases. It would depend whether the animal is in the Braisa that Tosfos says they're talking about where the animal is extremely sick. The only thing you can do for it is hakaza, or else it's going to die. Whereas the Mishnah is talking about that it has high blood pressure, but it's still possible to do something else. You don't even necessarily have to do hakaza at all. So Reb Shimon is allowing you to do hakaza, but not necessarily to shech. So most of the Rishonim, Paskin, understand, not like Tosfos, they understand that the Mishnah and the Braisa are basically talking about the same case. And therefore, the halacha would, if we're saying the halacha is like Reb Shimon of the Braisa, it would mean you could do the hakaza regardless. And if you ended up making a mum, you could shech the animal based on that. The Rosh, because you didn't have intent, the Rosh learns like Tosfos over here and makes the distinction. It depends how sick the animal was, basically, whether it was absolutely necessary to do the hakaza or not. Because that's what Tosfos is saying. The Mishnah and the Braisa are talking about two different cases. The Braisa is talking about where the animal was deathly ill. The Mishnah is talking about not necessarily like that. But so the Rosh would say that if the animal was not quite so deathly ill, then yes, you could do the Hakadah, as Reb Shimon is saying, but you wouldn't necessarily be able to shecht it afterwards because of that. In Shulchan Aruch it only brings the Rambam's opinion. The Taz over there brings the Rosh's opinion. Mishnah says, Hatsodim Oizen B'Bukhur. Now we're talking about, so if a person does make a mum deliberately on a Bukhur, Sodim means that Rashi says Hatsodim, that he makes a knot or a slit or whatever in the ear of the Bukhur. Again, as we said before, according to the Alter Rebbe, it would have to be that he did it deep inside the ear. According to other opinions, it would be even superficially. Yeah, according to the Alter Rebbe, it would have to be deep inside the ear. When we get to the next paragraph,
it seems to be more superficial.
Okay, not necessarily. It could mean a notch deep on the cartilage deep inside the ear. Whatever.
Is it saying that if you're pagan, that this is like, you know, of course you can't check it because you only get it superficially.
No, because that's not enough. Okay. Rashi also makes the point of saying we're talking about over here about a koyan doing that, where now the koyan wants to be able to check the animal and eat it. Well, yeah, which leads to a lot of discussion among the Achronim. Ma'arit Al-Ghazi talks about it, and then a couple of other Achronim talk about, are we saying that if Yisrael did it, that the Kohen would not be also in it, because after all, the Kohen didn't do anything wrong, would it maybe still be also to the Kohen as well? That's fine.
The Kohen of Yisrael doesn't change.
No, the point is that here he made a mum in it, and that on the face of it, that mum ought to be enough to make it be shechted, but as we're going to say, there's a knas that you can't do that. So the question is, would the knas go in?
Okay. You cook for yourself,
yeah, let's say. Yeah. Okay. So the point is a similar idea. Do we count for somebody else? We're going to see in the Gemara, we're going to have a bit of discussion about that as well. Okay. A certain oizen b'bechor, so somebody makes a slit or a notch or whatever in the ear of a b'chor, hareza lo yushchet elomis divir rabliyazer. Rabliyazer says you're never allowed to shech that b'chor. The chum say not necessarily, it's not that bad. Nerlid by mum acher, if the animal later on develops a different mum, Yishchadalav, then fine, you're able to shech the animal based on that. But not before, because they agreed. You can't shech it based on the first mum. You made it deliberately, but yeah. Okay, so the question is, the Gemara says, "Umi konis Rebbe Eliezer la'olam." Are you telling me that Rebbe Eliezer in such cases says a knas that lasts forever, that it's never going to be mutter, even if it develops a different mum? Or a mini, I have a contradiction. A Mishnah in the Sech in the Goyim tells us, Misha Hoysalei Baheres, if a person had a spot of Tzaraas, B'nikseta, and it accidentally got cut off, fine, Tahar, then he's Tahar because there's no more Tzaraas. But what happens, cuts the Miskavin, what happens if he deliberately cut it off, intending to make himself Tahar, which he's being over on an Isser Minatoda with that, because
it's possible.
Well, similar. Well, actually, the truth is, Tosfos points out it may not be so simple. Because when we say over here, it's true, we said before, there's an Isser to make a mum in a Bechor town. Fine, we said there's an Isser Daraita in it. But this that we're saying in our Gemara, that you're not allowed to shecht it and eat it based on that mum, Tosfos brings from a Sifri, which Rashi also brings on the Pasuk, that it may actually be Daraita. On the other hand, Tosfos says the implication of our Gemara over here, that we're talking about a knack, seems to be it's only Darabanan. So Tosfos mentions a couple of possibilities. One possibility, indeed, is that the Sifri over there is only an Asnachta, that we're not actually learning it from the Pasuk. Okay, anyway, the point is that...
if you need this to arise...
No, in other words, the Sifri would bring the Pasuk, like Seichel Kol Te'eva, that you're not allowed to but not, the Sifri may be bringing the Pasuk as an Asnachta. Okay, anyway, that's one answer Tosfos gives. Anyway, okay, so... Cuts the miskavin, so if the person cut off the tzaraas deliberately, and with that he's over on a loisa in the Torah, he's shoma b'nega tzaraas. So the question is, do we penalize him that he can't be tar? Rabbi Eliezer says no, we don't penalize him forever. If eventually he develops another nega, another spot of tzaraas somewhere on his body, yitar hey menu, then he'll be tar from that one. In other words, we assume that once the second one goes away, then the first one also would have gone away if it had still been there. So therefore, now he's tar. The chum say no. Ad shetifras the kuloi. The only way for him to be tahor is, yes, a second nega has to come, but it has to be that second nega spreads all over his whole body. And we know the Torah tells us in Parshas Tazria that if a person has tzaraas over their whole body, then they're tahor. So fine, he has an area that where the tzaraas was cut off. Now a new tzaraas comes about and spreads on the whole rest of his body. Good, so it would have been now his whole body would have been covered by tzaraas. Therefore, he'd be tahor anyway. Or another possibility is that the Baheres becomes less than a gris. A gris is the size of a certain kind of bean. In halacha, it's defined as the area 6 by 6 hairs on there, 6 by 6 hairs, where 6 by 6 hairs can grow on the body. It's relevant also in Hilchos Nidah, so we'll talk about it in Masechta Nidah in a few months, Bez Hashem. You have six by six hairs. The Alter Rebbe holds, you have the different understandings of what the Alter Rebbe actually holds about it, but basically it seems the Alter Rebbe holds about the size of a dime, more or less. You have some poskim or look. Okay, depends on where on the body you're talking. Yeah, we're down the skin. We're not talking about the head. We're talking about the skin. So anyway, the Alter Rebbe seems to hold it's about the size of a dime, although you have different understandings exactly what the Alter Rebbe's opinion is based on different sizes of coins and whatever. You have other poskim who hold more like the size of a penny. You have a number of different opinions. Anyway, so if the Baheres is less than a gris, then fine. A Baheres less than a gris is not matame anyway. Now, what do you mean it's less than a gris? So you have a few different explanations over here. Rashi says what it means is the original Baheres that the person cut off, was it less than a gris when he cut it off? If so, the Chachamim say he's okay. If not, if it was a gris or bigger, then the Chachamim will say no good. No good, because he was already tummy from it. Tosfos says that no, we don't have the girsish ad shetismayit for how to make a gris, because what's the relevance? You cut it off. There's nothing left to be smaller than a gris. Okay. Anyway, the point is that Rabbi Eliezer is not penalizing him forever. Rabbi Eliezer is saying eventually he develops another sarah. Once that second one goes away, then the first one also, we assume, would have gone away also. So why over here by the Bechor is he saying that if you made a mum in it deliberately, then even if it later on develops another mum, you're not allowed to shest it? Why is he penalizing you more over here than over there? Fine, but nevertheless, a din is a din. In both cases, you've been over on an ister d'oraisa, not to make a mum or not to cut off sarah. In both cases, the question is, can you now have hanah from it, shecht and eat it, or be tar? And in one case, Rabbi Eliezer is penalizing you forever, and in the other case, he's not. What's the difference? The answer is, Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef da'ami tavayu. Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef both say, the answer is, kikonet Rabbi Eliezer b'mamoinoi. You know when Rabbi Eliezer is penalizing him is when it's something that only applies to his property. The gufoi lekonis, he's not going to penalize him when it comes to his own guf. What's the difference? Because with his mamon, he might well go ahead and do it. What happens? He might figure, look, I have this bechor over here. It's a white elephant. I can't do anything with it. I might as well make a mum in it. And then let's see what happens. If they allow me to shecht it and then eat it, then I'm good. And if not, then I haven't lost anything. I'll wait for another mum to develop. I'm no worse off than I was before. As opposed to, why would he do it with his own body? What is he going to do? He's going to cut off the Baheres. And if we, he's going to cut off the Baheres. What are we going to say? What is he going to do? He's going to say that I'm willing to take the chance. If I develop another spot of Tarah, then I'll be tar. He might never develop another spot of Tarah. He's not going to take the chance. He has too much to lose. No, not an ear. We're not talking about that over here. But the point is, in other words, so therefore, when it comes to cutting off the sarah, he's not going to take the chance because, on the one hand, yes, they might declare him tar, but on the other hand, they might declare you're still tame and you're tame until you develop another sarah, and I might never develop another sarah, so therefore, he's not going to take the chance. Alma Rabba, so Rabba says, okay, that's a good answer, but Kasha. What about? Fine, that takes care of the contradiction between Rabbi Eliezer's two opinions. What about the Chachamim? In the Mishnah over here, they're the opposite of Rabbi Eliezer. They're saying that once another mum develops, then you're good. In the case of Saras, they're saying the other way around, that even if another Saras develops, you're not good, unless it covers the whole body, where then he's Tahar anyway. So how are you explaining that contradiction? Your explanation doesn't cover that. Ella, so the Rabbi says, no, rather like this. Rabbi Eliezer, like Kasha. Fine, the contradiction between the two statements of Rabbi Eliezer is not a problem. Kiddushaninim, because you're right, fine, we can use Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef's answer, but there's a difference between his mamon and his guf. Rabbanon ad Rabbanon nam like Kasha. There's also no contradiction between the two statements of the Rabbanon, by the Bechor and by Salah. This is Rabbi's answer, Rabbi's answer. Because Hocha b'mayda ovid kansua, because in each case, we're penalizing him in a way that relates to what he did. Like this. Let's figure out. In the case of the Bechor B'mayi, Kavim L'mishriye, what was he trying to be master this Bechor with? Bahai Muma. He was trying to do this Muma in it. He was trying to cut his ear. And therefore, L'mishriye means to make it mutter. Shori means mutter. So he was trying to make it mutter b'chaim mumah, with that mum. Well, very well then, therefore. B'chaim mumah kansur rabbanon. So therefore, in that mum, the chachamim penalized him. The b'chaim mumah lo l'shtirile, that only with that mum it won't be mutter to him. But there's no reason to penalize him further than that, rabbanon will say. On the other hand, v'hocha b'mai b'ovid kansur. So therefore, that's why the rabbanon are make all over here, because, fine, you can't shech based on that mum, because that's the mum that you were trying to. You were trying to make it right now that you can shech the animal, and instead you're going to have to wait. On the other hand, when it comes to Tzaras, V'hochav Maida Ovid Kansua, over there they also penalize him in a way that's directly related to what he did. Ikavin L'Tahure Nafshe, after all, what was he trying to accomplish by cutting off the Tzaras? He was trying to make himself Tahor, Baha'i Ksitza, with this cutting off. Well then, Baha'i Ksitza Kansua Rabbanon. Well, that very same cutting off is where the Rabbanon penalize him and say, you remain Tomei, as if the Tzaras was still there. We still have to consider all along as if the Tzaras is still there. And therefore, only if Tzaras spreads over his whole body, fine, then he's going to be Tomei anyway. Then we have no choice but to be Mekatechim. But as long as even he develops Tzaras spots in other places on his body, and later on they heal, not necessarily would this one have healed. So therefore, the Chachamim are penalizing him on the exact place, in the exact spot of Tzaras that he cut off.
And over there?
Over there, in the case of the Bechor, they're penalizing him with the exact mum that he made. He wants to be matur the animal now, therefore the animal is not mutter now, it's going to be mutter later. So that explains why they're mako over here and machmir over there. Because over here, the purpose was to be matur the animal with this mum. Over there, the purpose was to make himself completely tahor forever. And therefore, instead, he remains tummy forever, unless he develops tzaras all over his body.
Or until
he develops tzaras all over his body.
Over there, he was trying with the whole...
He was trying to make himself taller completely. He was trying to get out of the whole thing.
Yeah.
No, not the whole body. He had a tzaras spot on one particular area on his body, and he cut it off, intending to make himself taller.
And it was not here on the bridge.
What?
Right.
Yeah. Here, he's trying to make a mum in the animal so that he can check it now. So fine, that mum you can't check it on, but a different mum you can check it on. So it's not an ongoing thing.
It's not the same thing with your body and your
No, that was the answer of Rabba and Rabbi Yosef. Why Rabbi Yezer is machmir over here and makel over there. No, what we're saying is, in the case of the animal, you were trying to do a short-term thing. You were trying to be matur it now. Instead, you don't have it mutter now, but you may have it mutter in the future. With the tzaras, he's trying to make himself a long-term thing. He's trying to make himself that whole forever be tahor from the tzaras. Therefore, forever he remains tahor with the tzaras. However, now, okay, so... I guess so, yeah.
Not just be impure.
Okay. Right.
Okay. So no contradiction.
Okay. Not now, boy Rapapa. Well, Rapapa asks the question, no, not a contradiction, but when we quoted the Mishnah before, we said, Rabbi Eliezer says, when another nega develops on this person, yitar heimenu, then he becomes tahor from the original one. In other words, when the second one goes away, then he's tahor from the first one. So the question is, Rapapa asks, what's the correct girsa in the Mishnah? Yitar tnan or v'yitar tnan? Is the correct girsa yitar or v'yitar? Does it mean, in other words, as soon as the second spot of Tzaras comes, he's automatically tahor from the first one? Or does it mean that would be yitar heimenu, right then, when the second spot comes, he's immediately tahor from that first spot, which he cut off? That would be one way of explaining it over the other. Or the other way is v'yitar, when the second one comes, and later on, eventually, the second one goes away, at that point, he becomes tahor from the first one. What is it?
Either he becomes
Tahor immediately as soon as the second one comes, or he becomes Tahor when the second one goes away. So what is it? That depends whether they say Yitar or V'Yitar. So the question is, am I not going to mean? Okay, what's the practical difference? La-locha. Either way, it's Tomei. Either way, it's Tomei from the second one. The answer is L'chosen Shanira by Nega. The Nakamina would be, suppose that a Chosen during the week of his Sheva Brachos develops Tzaras. Suppose, in other words, so he had Tzaras beforehand, before he was married. He cut it off. We're saying that he's still Tomei until, according to Rabbi Eliezer, until the new Tzaras spot comes. Now, in the middle of his days of Sheva Brachos, the new Tzaras spot comes. Now, we know that there's a din, the Tznan. We learn in a Mishnah, also in the Gaid.
Even if he doesn't try the whole one, if the second one comes and then leaves, he's...
According to Rabbi Eliezer, he was according to Rabbi Eliezer, yes.
Right.
Yeah, according to the Chachamim, no. Okay, so Ditchnan, now we learn in a Mishnah in Negoyim, Chosin Shinirbo Nega, if a Chosin has a Tzaras spot appear on him, the Koyin doesn't see him right away and declare him Tomei, Noisin Loi Zayin Yomim, we give him 7 days, 7 days of Sheva Brachos, Loi for himself, for his body, Ula Ifilitha Ula Stusa, and for his talus and for his other clothing, in other words, if he has Tzaras of clothing, if he has Tzaras on his clothing, same thing, we wait till after Sheva Brachos before we check it. So the question then therefore would be, so now the question is, what happens during those days of Sheva Brachos? Iam if Yitzhachnan, if you say that Rebbe Eliezer is saying as soon as the second one comes, he's Tahor from the first one, well then good, Mikamaisa Tahor Lei. So he becomes Tahor from the first one at that point. Lebasraisa Natrin Lei Zayinim Emishta. And the second one, he's going to anyway wait till the end of Sheva Brachos. So meanwhile, he has in between 5 or 6 or 7 or whatever days to that he's Tahor. If you understand it that way, Eli Yamit Vid Yitzhar Chnan. But if you say that the Girsa in the Mishnah is supposed to be Vid Yitzhar, then Soif, then after all, he's not Tahor during the seven days yet. Soif, Tila Mitamila Basraisa. Granted, he's not yet Tomei because of the second one, because the Kohen is not supposed to check the second one until after the Shadow Brachos. He's still Tomei from the first one. So that would be the Naftamina. Whether we say Yitzhar or V-Yitzhar. Tosfos actually points out, you don't have a different issue anyway. Suppose we're going to say, fine, the guy is Tomei, suppose that we're saying according to the first possibility that the guy is going to be Tahor from the first one and he doesn't become Tomei from the second one until after the Sheva Brachos, until the Kohen checks him after the Sheva Brachos. So what, Tosfos says, he's still not able to enjoy his Sheva Brachos with his wife. A Masorda is also the Tashmish HaMitzah during the 7 days after he becomes Tahor. So he needs, he's still going to need the whole thing with the birds and the shaving and everything. So therefore, what's he gaining from it? So Tosfos answers one thing, or one answer that Tosfos says, is we could be talking about over here, from the first one, he wasn't a Masorda Musker, he wasn't a Masorda Muchot, he wasn't a confirmed Masorda, it wasn't that the Kohen had checked it and found that it had white hair or spread or whatever, which makes it Tomei Muchot, it was only Musker, it was the situation where you have to lock him up for a week and then you come back a week later and check it. So then if he cut it off during that time, then he doesn't need Tiglachos to part him, because you only need that after Muchot. That's one answer in Tosfos. The other possibility, Tosfos says, is even if we're talking about that he was a muchot, okay, he's Tomei midrabanan, but nevertheless he could still minat Torah, he's still able to do the tiglachas and siparim and then to be tohor minat Torah, and then he's able to have relations. He's not able to bring his korban because midrabanan is still Tomei, but fine, no, you still have. There's a difference between daraisa and midrabanan. Anyway, so the question, going back to the Gemara, so again, the question is it Yitzhar that he Tahor as soon as the second one comes, therefore throughout his Sheva Brachos he'll be Tahor? Or is it the Yitzhar that only once we take care of the second one and then it goes away will he be Tahor? And in that case, he's still going to be Tomei, at least Midrabanan, during the days of Sheva Brachos. The question is only according to Rebbe Eliezer anyway. The halacha is not like Rebbe Eliezer. The halacha is like a chachamim that you have to wait anyway. He has to wait until tzaras spreads over his whole body. So in that case, it's less of an issue. If tzaras spreads over his whole body, he's going to be tahor regardless. So then it's a moot point whether.
And tzaras spread over the whole body becomes.
Then he's tahor, yeah. That's the positive tells us. Being koroyach kipra
hatzaras.
Yeah, but everybody's Tahor, yeah.
Okay. So although, meaning there's no patches?
Yeah, it's pretty much, well, more or less. I mean, it's not quite like that. There are certain, first of all, there are areas of the body that are normally covered, for example, the armpits or whatever, where Tzaras and nose and Michia and nose, they're on the exposed skin, basically.
All white.
The exposed skin. It's a good question. I don't know. It does seem from various places. I think I once saw something that suggests that it makes a person feel weak or something, but I don't remember the source of it. But yeah, it could be emotional. It could be that it itches. No, you don't have tzaras nowadays. In principle, it could. There's nothing about tzaras in principle that depends on the manchavis nefeshkayim. A person can't bring his korbanos, of course, but he could. Why doesn't it exist? The one idea, which a number of the mafarshim bring, and the Alter Rebbe talks about it, in the Kutcher Torah, is because tzaras only happens to people on a very high ruchnius level. And none of us are, in fact, the Alter Rebbe develops the idea in the Pesach Torah that the idea is we're talking about a person who is basically, his good on the inside. His inside is completely good. There's just some superficial problems with him, and therefore Taras comes out superficially on his skin.
He's saying the Alter Rebbe was not spiritually elevated?
Was the Alter Rebbe doing one of the Averas that the person started asking? The point is, we'd have to be talking about somebody who is spiritually elevated, but also who does one of the things that gets him Sarah.
Do you remember the seven things that caused Sarah?
No, but we'll learn about them in Erechim in a few questions.
Cool. Yeah,
well, that's
what it is.
So one second.
Right.
How can you be elevated in Lashon Hara?
Unfortunately, even a person who's even a person who's elevated can still do an Avera, right? But, yeah. I mean, Yochanan Kohen Gadol became a Sadduki, that's true, Yochanan Kohen Gadol became a Yochanan Kohen Gadol, that was Kohen Gadol for 80 years and became a Sadduki, So whatever it is, it could happen that you have somebody who's very spiritually elevated, and therefore any problems are only superficial, but nevertheless they do one of the Averis, one of the seven things that it mentions in Erchin, or 11 things that it mentions in the Medrash, or whatever, that get a person to that. From Simon Tetrish.